Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Greetings from sunny South Africa. This is episode 16 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Before I tell you guys a little bit about the guest, I just want to remind you to check out our show sponsors, the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store. If you go to the store, you'll get 10% off anything, including our amazing gi designs that have full HD printed inner linings, our rash guards, our high quality belts, our Jiu-Jitsu t-shirts, hoodies, patches, and our online learning instructional material. Just use the code PODCAST at checkout and you'll get 10% off. And you can go to the store by visiting store.jiu-jitsubrotherhood.com. So today's guest is someone I haven't even known that long, and I've only met in person maybe 3 or 4 times, but he's become a very, very close friend. His name is Nathan Rathz, and he's a South African man. The interesting thing about Nathan is not only is he a very good jiu-jitsu black belt, but he is also a highly, highly accomplished shaman, and he has worked with the ayahuasca plant medicine over 400 times. Now, if you guys are familiar with any of my work, you'll know I'm a huge advocate for ayahuasca and what it can do. And I really hope if you're someone who's not familiar with the super strange sounding thing, that you will listen to this episode with an open mind and that you will let go of all your filters and preconceptions for the next 30 or so minutes and try to understand that despite what you may have been told or despite the ideas you might have in your mind of what ayahuasca is, you really have no idea until you've experienced it. You have no idea what that stuff is. I've done it over 20 times now and it still blows my mind every single time, and I'm still shown just how little I know about it every single time I engage with it. So, slightly stranger episode of the show today. Either way, I hope you guys enjoy it. So without further ado, here is episode 16, Nathan Rathz.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. It's a special treat for everyone today. We have what I consider to be one of the most interesting people in my life, and I know a bunch of interesting people. This is my friend Nathan Rathz. Nathan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me, man. I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
So, Nathan, the reason I wanted to have you on the show is a few, as I discussed with you earlier before we started recording, you are at a very interesting nexus point between two worlds, and those are the worlds of jiu-jitsu. You're an accomplished jiu-jitsu black belt, and the other world is, I know you don't like the word shamanism because it's loaded, but you are a guide who works with plant medicine. Would that be an accurate thing of saying?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think one of the reasons that you're different from pretty much anyone else I know a lot of extremely high-level jiu-jitsu guys, and I know a lot of people who are well-experienced with shamanism and plant medicine, but I don't know anyone who's at the same level of, or at a similar level in both. And I believe that makes you a very interesting cat. Let's go down each route separately. Could you tell me first how you became to be a jiu-jitsu black belt?
I used to suffer from really bad anxiety attacks and panic attacks that were based off epilepsy. And I was in therapy already out of high school. I think I was 17, and someone actually, you know, they asked, what is your greatest fear? And I didn't really know what to say. And I said, well, I'm terrified of being hurt or hit or being in a fight. And they said, well, you need to go and do that. So my journey started with a lot of martial arts, and I was doing many styles and I was loving it until I came across a 60 kilogram teeny little guy who took his glasses off and then proceeded to paste me from the one side of the room to the other. And I had to ask him, how did you do that? And he said, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And I was addicted. That was it. That was the path for me.
And so it's my understanding you Then you started training jiu-jitsu, and did you still face battles with the claustrophobia during your roles on the mat?
It was actually horrific. I was actually telling you the other day, I remember hearing the screaming in one of my classes, and I actually realized that it was me screaming. Someone had held me down, and the idea of being so out of control and so suppressed actually freaked me out to the point that I became involuntary. I just started screaming at the guy, and it was a real challenge. But also helped me grow in so many ways to get over those spaces of conflict, you know.
That's very interesting because you and I have a mutual friend. I'm not going to say his name, but he'll know who he is when he hears this. He's a good jiu-jitsu guy, a good brown belt. And one of the reasons he's been hesitant to do any kind of journeying with plant medicine is because his fear of lack of control. And I wonder, do you think it's a similar kind of thing that you kind of just have to dive in the deep end and give up that idea that you're in control? And learn to kind of ride the wave when it comes to plant medicine, the same way you did it with jiu-jitsu. Do you think there's something to that?
I think you read my mind. I mean, to me, they are both paths of inner exploration, of learning about oneself. And one of the first things you have to let go of is the illusion of control, you know. And it's easier said than done. But yes, I think that's something that is a massive similarity there.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, one of the reasons it's. I think the ayahuasca, which is a form of plant medicine, the one that you work closely with, or the one that you work the most with, there's this weird current in the media, which we spoke about this past weekend, and that is that it's become one of those things that's almost cliched. Like people talk about all these soccer moms in Los Angeles doing ayahuasca and stuff like that, and then it's kind of now it's almost lost a little bit of its power because of that. You know, you think, oh, it's just something that like Westerners are struggling, they kind of do. It's just in vogue, like not vaccinating your kids or a bunch of other weird things, you know. And it's for me, I find that it would be a great loss, I think, to anyone listening who'd considered working with these things if they didn't, because of the way it's been portrayed in the media. When you get what I'm saying?
I totally get what you're saying. And I mean, at the end of the day, the same thing has happened to, you could say, yoga, the same thing has happened to meditation. But at the end of the day, it's the sanctity that you bring towards something, the intention, the housing of what it is that you feel you are approaching and what it is you're wanting to get out of it. You can take the most pure things in the world and do the same thing with them. And at the end of the day, I think one of the oldest medicines that we know of that has thousands of years of track record, there must be something to this. And those that have done it, well, they know there really is. And I think throwing the baby out with the bathwater would be a travesty for people. I think that as many researchers, for instance, at Johns Hopkins University are showing us, is that some of the doctors there are saying that this might be the future of psychological health.
That's interesting. Could you explain a little bit more when you say this might be the future of psychological health? What does that mean to you?
Most of what we know about the mind was very influenced by LSD. And I'm talking in actual research. And that research was all shut down in the 70s. But there are places, like I mentioned, Johns Hopkins, where they're using things like psilocybin, etc. And they're getting people to make shifts psychologically, for instance, like with post-traumatic stress disorder, in a matter of 2 or 3 days of what would have taken 10 years of therapy. So they're not saying they know exactly how this is going to fit into the mainstream model, but they are already thousands of scientists and doctors worldwide that are fighting for it at least to be brought more clearly onto the table. I know psychologists that come and drink medicine with me.
That's something I mean, most of what we're going to be talking about in this show, you and I probably touched on in our private discussions, but you know, I dated a doctor of clinical psychology for a long time, and she. I know I kept recommending to her after, I mean, we broke up, but I still stayed in touch with her. And I then started drinking ayahuasca, and I kept saying to her that, you know, she should try drinking this medicine. And she just gave me a bunch of reasons of why it wasn't necessary and all of the dangers and blah, blah, blah. And I realized that I can't take anyone who claims to be a doctor of the psyche, as a, for example, a psychologist, seriously, until they have done work similar to this, until they've done something, a deep, deep introspective dive with something like ayahuasca or psilocybin or some other form of plant medicine. Because how can you claim to know how to fix someone else's mind when you don't even know the darkest recesses of your own?
I think that was one of the my best statements I've heard you say lately, because you really don't understand your inner workings until you dive in there. And fear always stems from the unknown. And until we know ourselves in that way, we will always have stories filled with unnecessary dialogue of fearful beliefs and fearful thoughts. And the irony is that going in there, you always discover that it is actually the fear of the unknown that is far more destructive than actually making these caves or these recesses known. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the people that I trust most, especially when it comes to any form of guidance, are those ones who have faced the polar opposite energies. They've been involved in the darker sides of their souls. They've illuminated them, and they can give incredible guidance and advice.
So... So much of what you've just said, it evokes a lot of things in my mind. The first is, maybe about 20 years ago, I was 18 or 19, and there was a buddy from school. He wasn't a close friend. I'd say he was more, wouldn't even say he was a friend. He was a friend of a friend. I hadn't seen him for a few years. Something had happened to him. He'd had like a psychological break. And a mutual friend of ours, and I was sitting down, and I said to him, what happened to John? Have you seen him lately? And he said, yeah, I saw him the other day. He's okay now. And I said, well, tell me a little bit more. Tell me what happened. And he said, he has the look of someone who went on a very long, 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 deep journey within. And I always am reminded of you when I think of that, because that buddy of ours who's afraid to let go of control that I spoke of earlier, that mutual friend of ours, he asked me, you know, you and him, he have been living in a different city for a while. He hasn't been in close contact with you since you started down this path of your life. And he was kind of a bit worried that you weren't qualified to be doing this stuff. And I just said to him, I said, no, he's black belt, right? It's, you know, that's the thing I love about being a jiu-jitsu guy, is when you're with other jiu-jitsu guys, you can use that belt ranking system to like talk yeah. about something completely different. Now, it's my understanding that you have done almost 400 ceremonies with this medicine, which... if you haven't done ayahuasca, take it from me. That is a fuckload. This is an absolute fuckload of ayahuasca. But I guess what I'm interested in is, why did you start working with this medicine? What was the point? What was it in your life that led you to the point where you were looking for something and decided to drink this strange concoction of herbs and plants from the Amazon jungle?
I think I led a very tormented life as a child with an undiagnosed epilepsy and very difficult anxiety and stuff like that. And it led me on a very deep spiritual path. And one of my absolute fascinations, because when I was a child, is I used to often experience myself without my body. I would wake up terrified in the room looking at myself. And it was only many years later that I began to actually override the fear and actually want to know more about what it was that was driving me. Why am I in this state? Why am I afraid of things that can never, ever be brought to conscious light through trying? Because there was no lack of trying in my life, but I was a disaster. I felt like things were just happening to me all the time, and I was reacting. So I began to actually get my life... I would say sorted out, you know, it's the best way I can put it. And I was working a lot of processes of consciously traveling without my body, however you want to perceive that. Mm-hmm. And of course, the natural inclination then was to discover what kind of things could assist this, because I'm spending a lot of time without my body as it is. And that brought me to ayahuasca.
So what I would like to do is... I will know that we have both done our job with this conversation when the tough guy jiu-jitsu dude who might be thinking, oh, this is, it's all bullshit, it's just for weak-minded people, or like these guys have got too much time on their hands, or like that's a drug, it's just a drug, I don't do drugs. You know, I'll know our job is done when we have been able to give them a different perspective. And I speak about it with my mom. My mom, she's very resistant to these kinds of things because of her particular brand of religious belief. But I know I sat down and had a long conversation with her recently, and I saw a crack appeared in that armor that she had built in her psyche. What would you say to that jiu-jitsu guy who would say two things? The first is that it's just a drug. These are drugs. I don't do drugs. What would you say to that?
You know, what jumps to mind is something that Dennis McKenna said. He said, you're just a drug. And every single thing that's happening inside you is just a biological chemical process. And what's interesting is that at the end of the day, you are changing your consciousness constantly, daily, by everything that goes in your mouth and out your mouth. To eat a pizza is an altered state. To drink a cup of coffee is an altered state. And we can label these states good or bad, but at the end of the day, what we put in our mouths definitely has a category of opening us or closing us. And there's definitely something that can be found in society to say that some of these things seem to reinforce ego and some of them seem to dissolve ego. So what I would say to a person is that you're kidding yourself that you're not exploring or altering your consciousness every time you have a tequila, every time, and all that. If there is this premise that possibly humankind has begun to shut down certain parts of themselves, is it really that hard to believe that Mother Nature would create something that can help us retouch, reintegrate, and connect to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes back to, the best way I can describe it is, until you've experienced the power of something like ayahuasca, you cannot have an opinion of it. You can't. It's like my mom and I were having this argument, and I just said to her, Mom, look, what it comes down to is, it would be like me telling you what it's like to have children, to give birth as a man, even after I've read a bunch of books on childbirth or heard a bunch of opinions or stories or watched a documentary on childbirth. It's just, I don't know, but you know. The same way for you to sit here and tell me that, oh, this is the work of the devil, or this is just a drug. It's, you're not speaking from a place of understanding and knowledge or a place of wisdom. And I think, you know, I have so many friends who I just know this stuff. I'm not saying they need it. These are people who have, who are very successful and, in my opinion, psychologically balanced and well integrated. But I am confident that even those people would get something out of ayahuasca, because it is such an adventure. It is such a powerful, moving, fascinating, multi-dimensional experience. And I'm still looking for the way to just find those chinks in their armor, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I guess what one of the questions I've got written for you here, if it is, if someone was on the fence about trying plant medicine, what's the one thing you would say to them to convince them?
That's a difficult question, actually. I think that I never really convince anybody to do plant medicine, but I know exactly what you mean. There's two major categories of people that I've noticed are always approaching medicine. The first category is the person who's at that point in life where they just have nowhere to turn, which is why in our community we have hundreds of ex-drug addicts and things that bought themselves right. So that's the person that kind of is at rock bottom. They've tried to solve this intellectually and they can't do it. But the second person is the person who's just a deep, sincere thinker and explorer. And those are the two people I find are, you know, that approach it. It's generally the people in the middle ground that, but what I can tell you personally is I've never seen it break or hurt somebody. I have seen it bring up old wounds that needed to be healed. I have seen people have memories return that they didn't know happened. So often, very rarely, it can actually get more difficult afterwards for a short period, the word catharsis, to bring a wound to the surface. But what I can tell you, and I say this at the beginning of every ceremony, and I tell everyone, I'm going to ask you if I was right. The thing you are going to hear most in this room is laughter. And that's the funny thing. Ayahuasca can bring up some very difficult things. And if it does, you're blessed, because it means that after that night, it's finally going to be brought to the surface. So you can avoid a few difficult hours and allow unconscious behaviors to control your life. Or you can decide there is a possibility that I might have some form of confrontation with myself. But what's incredible is a lot of people only experience absolute love and bliss, because for some people, that's what they most need.
Mm-hmm. I understand. And it's with us in the jiu-jitsu community, I find that, you know, I get very disappointed when you see this person who's gone down such a, he's gone so far down the path of physically actualizing himself as a jiu-jitsu player. He's developed these amazing skills, and he might have been like a, you know, that skinny dude who used to get sand kicked in his face on the beach, right? And now he's this amazing jiu-jitsu fighter, but he's not willing to go down this road. And I find it strange because, you know, someone once said to me, jiu-jitsu appeals, or martial arts appeal, to those people who don't feel complete and who don't feel whole and who are looking for something. You know, you don't walk into a class and put on weird pajamas and roll around with sweaty dudes because, you know, it just looks like fun. It's like you're looking for something. And again, I also don't think that ayahuasca is the cure for everything. And I think there's certain people who would probably drink it and be like, okay, that's not for me. But it is such a powerful medicine that for you to close your mind to it without at least maybe researching a little bit more and ultimately giving it a try, I think would be very, very sad. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I mean, what jumps to mind is a story that's circulating the internet lately about a very famous neurologist, and I can't think of her name, but she had an accident where basically she damaged the whole left side of her brain. And by the time she got full functionality back, and believe it or not, she did, she came out the other side with the most profound things to say about what's really going on here. And she actually mentioned that some of these medicines, like ayahuasca, they just quiet the left frontal side of your lobe that is very much about your identity and your story and your narrative. And it just quiets that region of the brain long enough for you to actually see what's going on and to hear this from a neurologist. And I think that that's what these things essentially do. And that opportunity to experience yourself without the little suffering story is absolute gold for anybody.
One of the things I think that needs to be made clear about ayahuasca and plant medicine in general is that it is not necessarily limited to a form, this extremely high level, extremely effective form of psychotherapy. It is also, the word that just keeps coming back to me is adventure. You know, like a lot of us have questions about what we're doing here, what's the meaning of life. And a lot of us just want to see something else. We just want to be introduced to a realm or a dimension or a thought or an experience that we can't get anywhere else. I believe that within every human being, there's this longing for connection, right? And I think that almost all the ills of society and almost all the other human foibles and failings are at their root either due to a lack of connection or due to this connection being craved or sought in a negative way. Porn's an example I use a lot. Porn to me is, it's almost like a perverted way of seeking that connection with another person. You know, drugs as well. And when I say drugs, I'm not talking about ayahuasca. I'm talking about, like, you know, when you go do heroin or when you have a kind of addiction, it's just, you're looking for some connection. You're looking for that feeling of being alive. And the thing that comes back to me over and over and over again is, you know, when we drink this medicine in these little ceremonies, I usually find it more often than not, it's very difficult and it can be scary. But when I come out of it, I never feel as connected and as open and as integrated and as excited about life as I do in the days and weeks immediately following one of these plant medicine ceremonies. So the thing I'm trying to impart to people, and again, I don't have shares in Ayahuasca Corp. You know, I've got nothing ready to sell, except I know that one day I'm going to meet someone who listened to the show and was like, Nick, I heard the show and I drank ayahuasca and it's amazing. And he and I are going to sit down and have this amazing conversation. That's one of the things. I want more guys in the jiu-jitsu community to be able to share this and express it and enjoy it. So I guess that's where I'm going with that, you know. And I can hear in my voice when I'm saying this that I sound like a zealot or like an evangelical religious person that's trying to get you to come to their church. And it's not that. It's just, you get what I'm saying, Nathan?
I so get what you're saying, you know, and a lot of things that are coming out. There's a guy named Dr. Gabor Mate, I think. And what they're saying is everything we know about addiction is wrong. And they have connected it to the fact that it's lack of connection. Mm-hmm. So I recently had a conversation with a family. Their entire family comes to ceremony every 6 months, teenagers included. And they were asking me, why do I think that ayahuasca has helped their teenagers' depression? And they were waiting for a very, very spiritual, convoluted answer. And there is the biochemical side that's very researched, and it definitely does create neural plasticity in your brain. And it's very, very validated scientifically. But the answer I gave them is exactly what you're saying. I said that when you believe that this is all there is, it's very hard not to feel depressed, not to feel very defensive, mm-hmm. not to want to attack someone if they scratch your car, because this is all you have. Mm-hmm. And what I feel with depression is it's very much when you feel like the world is shrinking down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And ayahuasca gives us that experience, as I said, without that one part of our brains activated, where we see that there is so much more. Everybody experiences the perfection, the connection, how everything lies into each other. And I don't think that their depression is so much the chemical side. It's the fact that they come out the next day, which is the experience that you have, of just realizing there is so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to be depressed when you have glimpsed the perfection of reality.
Mm-hmm. There's a real current operating in the modern world, and that is of it's form of scientific reductionism in which, you know, everything is just broken down into its smallest parts and it's explained away. You know, like that sunset is beautiful because it's a certain wavelength of light that's hitting your eyes and is causing a release of melatonin, which is making you feel a certain way. And the sky is a certain color because of the molecules in the atmosphere. And we're trying to explain all these things. And I mean, evolutionary biology is one of the fields. I used to study it quite a lot. I was really trying to figure out a certain thing about relationships. And it led me to this belief that, you know, we're men are just trying to have as many mates as possible, and women are just trying to look for the strongest man. And this is just super reductionist. And I realized that whenever I go down that route in that specific aspect of my life, that's when I become most dejected and I feel most alone and most isolated. And it may or may not be true. It may these scientific facts that are being brought to the forefront in these theories may or may not be true, but they don't make me feel good. And I guess some people could argue that it's me sticking my head in the sand, but I don't think so. I think it's more than that. I think that what I get from plant medicine and what I get from that connection with the divine is something that almost every human being has an inbuilt desire for, whether they know it or not. People want to have these awe-inducing experiences where they're like, oh my fuck, I just went into this realm and I connected with these angels, or, you know, it showed me how life works on a macroscopic level and how that's connected to our spiritual evolution, or you know, I'm just throwing stuff at you, but you get what I'm saying. I think there's a need, there's a desire, and I really, like, I don't want to see my friends and my listeners and the people closest to me and in general humanity go without that.
I so agree. I mean, if you ask me what the most profound parts of my life are, I would say when I could really see. And it wasn't always ayahuasca, but that was one of the main catalysts. But if you look at a garden, we have an operating system, and that operating system is very much our minds and we think we are our thoughts and we behave from impulse. And if you study the operating system, it can become very dejecting and sad and very predictable. But not everybody runs out of just that operating system. And this is an opportunity to see that there's actually a whole nother operating system behind the very predictable psychological makeup of thought, etc. And the reason I brought the garden up is if you look at a garden, the mind will break it down, as you said, and you will see a bee and you will see sand and you will see each thing as completely separate entities and you will label them and break them down, etc., etc. But actually, there is just one perfectly operating garden there. And the opportunity now is with the mind that segregates and labels and separates. That's the key word here. We see ourselves as separate to everything. And to experience yourself, even for just a short while, as not separate, changes your mystical, changes your expression or your relationship with the divine forever. It never tells you what to believe. There's no doctrine involved in this experience. It is an opportunity, as I think it was Blake said, to cleanse the lenses of perception.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is it? When the doors of perception, I think his quote is, when the doors of perception are truly open, man, or when the doors of perception are cleansed, mankind will see life as it truly is, yes. Infinite. If, yes. Something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that so is too, the experience, yes. We speak of.
You know, I just want to speak of something I went through recently. I was in London for the summer for the past 3 or 4 months. And, you know, I just was depressed for a bunch of reasons. And depression to me is, it's all about you. You can't see beyond yourself. You can't see beyond yourself and your problems and your own set of circumstances. And it's a very lonely, very isolated feeling in my opinion, the ultimate isolation. It's the ultimate form of isolation. And you and I and a couple of other friends were away this weekend, and we had partake in one of these medicine ceremonies. And I remember standing outside looking up at the stars and realizing that what I was experiencing right then was as far away from that feeling I had in London as possible. It was that connection with nature, connection with people around me, just an openness. It was like I changed the polarity from this super inward, it's all about me, to no, it's about everyone. And it's something I noticed about jiu-jitsu as well. It's been a big theme for me over the last 5-10 years of my life, is realizing that one of the ways to become the happiest you is to turn the focus off yourself and start trying to give back to others and see how you can help others. And it's an interesting thing, because jiu-jitsu, it is such a selfish thing that you're doing. You know, you want to learn the best techniques, and it's like you against the other guy, and you want to earn the medals, and you want to, and once you get to the zenith of it, you realize, okay, cool, I've got my black belt, or I've done well in competitions, or I've achieved what I need to achieve. Now the answer is how to turn it outward and how to give back. And it's so interesting how it's aligned with plant medicine. These two, you get what I'm saying? How, like,
I so get what you're saying. And I mean, even life, it's this process of your own struggle. It's all about you. And if you're one of those people that get to the point where you decide to make the affliction which was imposed upon you, which you chose, however which you want to perceive it, and you wish to turn that, what most people end up doing is they actually find peace in service. They actually want to give. And they want to, because they start to see things differently. And it's the same in the jiu-jitsu journey. You just said the same thing. It was only when I got to a black belt that I actually really started enjoying jiu-jitsu, because now I don't care if I get tapped. But I'm addicted to the brotherhood. I'm addicted to the way that these supposedly killers, you know, because people like any martial arts, the way they treat each other. And I'm addicted to the aspects of jiu-jitsu that makes people so integrated and calm. And it's the same thing with plant medicine, is you get to the point where I'm going to be self-obsessed for the rest of my life. It's a type of narcissism. I am suffering, but I'm self-obsessed. And the strange thing is you cannot solve yourself by focusing on yourself. Mm. You can only solve yourself by getting over yourself.
Wow.
And when you begin to live a different life where you want to bring joy and inspiration and things into other people's lives, you look again and your problem has disappeared. And the really weird thing is, has it disappeared? Or is it just that you've stopped giving it focus and energy and power?
Mm-hmm. I understand completely. I had a very, very, very interesting experience on the jiu-jitsu mat. I was teaching a private lesson. This was during that time in London, was part of what was leading to it. And I remember I was sitting in the butterfly guard and I had a bit of a knee injury. And I told the student, I said, look, I can only give you a lesson if you're super careful about my knee, right? Like, it's not in a good place. You got to be super careful. And we were sitting on the mat. And I remember I was not present. I started thinking about me and my problems, you know, and I was going down that route in my mind while I was teaching this lesson. This guy was, we were doing like some sparring. He was supposed to pass my guard. And I'll never forget, like, as I was going into that, he stamped on my one foot that's connected to the injured knee. And it was this lesson to me, like, do you know what I mean? It was life or the universe trying to say, get out of yourself, like fucking snap out of it. And I think it's jiu-jitsu and plant medicine are two ideal vehicles for fostering that form of connection and helping change people from self-centeredness to a service-based view of the world.
I so agree. And something that sticks with me is something that someone said to me in the south of Brazil. Is he was saying to me that rolling is like, you know, like smoking, man. And I asked him to explain. He's obviously talking about marijuana. And he said to me, it doesn't matter if he gets smashed on the mat or if he's operating, he's got to be so present. If he doesn't focus for a second, he's going to hurt himself. So he has to, for the only time in his day, really, really be present. And the way he experiences being present is that for 3 hours afterwards, he feels like he's had a good joint, even though he hadn't.
Interesting.
And that's to him the power of the release of being present. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that jiu-jitsu, unless you use it as a way to build up your ego, which is possible, just being present with yourself. And it also doesn't allow you to lie, because in jiu-jitsu, very similar to plant medicine, you are completely exposed. There's no, you can tell a great story before mm-hmm. the mat and you can have a great after story, but at the end of the day, you are completely exposed on the mm-hmm. mat.
Mm-hmm.
What is your strengths, what is your weaknesses will be made very apparent. And plant medicine is an opportunity very similarly to just actually remove all the dialogue that you're tricking yourself with and confusing yourself with and actually see what is. Mm-hmm. And amazing. Very few people are disappointed with what they see, but are very surprised at seeing where they're tripping themselves
mm-hmm.
up.
You know, I've had this idea for a while. I think you're going to play a part in it, but I would like to do, at some point, probably next year, I'd like to do the first one, a jiu-jitsu ayahuasca retreat in which we go either to South America or perhaps even here in South Africa. And we go away with a bunch of mats. And in the evenings we do ayahuasca ceremonies, and in the day we sweat it out and roll. And I think that would be really, really cool. So I'm just planting that seed out in the jiu-jitsu community now. It's going to happen sooner or later.
Sounds like the perfect getaway to me.
Yeah. Nathan, my brother, anyone who, as far as I'm concerned, anyone who listens to this and makes a judgment on someone like you or plant medicine as a whole, a negative judgment after the conversation we just had, I guess they're the ones who need ayahuasca more than anything, dude. Thank you so much for your time, my brother. If anyone listening wants to find out about you, I know you're starting a new gym on Monday here in South Africa. Do you want to let them know a little bit more about that, or maybe a bit more about the work you do with plant medicine and guiding? Like, please let us know where we can find more about you.
Well, our group is called the Mad Hatters Community, and it's just madhatterscommunity.co.za if anyone wants to get hold of us and the work we do. And the gym side, we actually just at the stages where we haven't even released a name yet. It's just happened all so quickly. and I'm excited for it, but I don't have much to share other than I'm going to be beginning in Bloberg shortly.
Okay, my brother, thank you so much for your time, dude. Really, like, such a pleasure for me to, I knew you were the right guy to talk about this topic with. And thank you for everything that you do for both of these communities, jiu-jitsu and plant medicine. Blessings on you, Nathan.
Thank you so much, man. Thanks for the talk.
Well, I hope you listened to that with, as I suggested in the beginning, an open mind. I know that this stuff isn't for everyone, but I strongly do believe that it can benefit almost anyone. And I was listening to myself speak during that interview, and I was kind of cringing inside because I thought, you know, maybe I sound like someone who's trying to sell my audience a religion, or I'm trying to sell them something, and nothing could be further from the truth. The only benefit I would get if any of you guys experience plant medicine is the joy of being able to share it with you if I met you in person, as I mentioned in the show. And I just want to make it clear that ayahuasca and plant medicine are not something that will replace your own belief systems or your own religious beliefs. They are something that will work within the context of your existing personality and help you become, in my opinion, the best version of yourself. And one last thing I want to say is, if you are interested in experiencing this, don't message me and ask me where you can do it, because I don't know. I only work with a couple of people in certain countries where it's legal, and I would suggest that you check the legality of it where you live as well. It's a symptom of our sick society that plant medicine in most of its forms is illegal, so make sure you check up or be aware of that before you get involved. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back in a week with another cool podcast. Until then, peace out.